Hi there, everyone. Welcome to Tech Take. I'm your host, Colby Hockney. Today we had Todd Kozane of the Collaborative Innovation Lab at Second Muse here with us. Todd, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, Colby. Thanks for having me.
Todd's here today to talk about an upcoming event at the White House. It's called Champions of Change, and it's held at the White House to honor select individuals working in open government and the civic hacking community. So with that, I'm going to let Todd take it away and tell us a little bit about the event. Go ahead, Todd.
Thanks, Katie. On June 1st, there were 96 events across the United States and the National Day of Civic Hacking, and it was an event that was put on by a partnership between between 23 federal agencies that kind of came together and opened data, and 96 events and local leads that helped convene individuals at all these different locations to come together and look at this open data and challenges that had been defined around this open data, and actually design solutions, start new businesses, and whatnot. And it was being supported by Code for America and by Intel and by Innovation Endeavors. The event that we're having at the White House next week is really a celebration of some of the outstanding solutions and whatnot that came out of the event. And it's really meant to be a celebration and a bit of a showcase of what some of the outcomes that came out of there.
Oh, great. And I know that with the Hack for Change event, a lot of the organizers, like yourself, called it the largest intergovernmental collaboration since World War II.
Yeah, that was our cheeky way of saying how big it was. It's pretty rare that we'll have that many federal agencies that will be working together, and it really was unprecedented in its size. At Second Muse, we've done, Random Acts of Kindness and, worked with NASA with the Space Apps Challenge. And we've been doing these types of organizing and convening these types of mass collaboration events for a while. But this one really was unprecedented, both in terms of the number of locations, but also the number of federal agencies that were actually coming together, really opening up brand new data. Some of these agencies were a bit more seasoned, but some of them were, doing this kind of stuff for, one of the first times, especially at the scale.
Right. So what can attendees for Champions Change expect to see at the event?
So the attendees over there are really going to see a couple of different things. I think that there's definitely going to be a showcase of some of the more impressive things that came out of the event. In any kind of event, when there's 11 or 12,000 people that will show up over the course of a weekend, you're going to see the entire range. But this is really to showcase some of the more impressive stuff that really came out of there, really to help, in a sense, catalyze the imagination of those there. Now, the people that are going to be present all themselves are in some ways involved in this really larger civic hacking movement. And so one of the big things that we're going to see as well is just a lot of dialogue as well amongst the people that are actually going to be there. Talking about, what next, what are the limits, what are the boundaries that we can push, especially kind of as we come, next time around.
Yeah, absolutely. So why do you think that events like this are so important?
Well, I think it's challenging. A lot of times people will work on, open governance, which has, really has to do with the posture of the organization. And then some people will work on data and opening up data, which, is a very difficult thing, because you have to think about, these federal agencies or organizations or corporations have huge amounts of data. And if you're going to open it up, well, what are you going to open up? What part, what data are you going to open up? What is it going to look like? What metadata do you put on top of it? How is it going to be useful? And so that's a huge amount of work itself. Then for communities that actually come up with really good ideas, you have different federal agencies and whatnot with granting programs, to help sort of advance some of these different ideas and whatnot. But it's really, if you're working in one of these silos and you're not seeing the entire cycle, that, you know, an open posture towards, you know, towards data, you know, allows people to open up that data and make it available to communities. And then if you have sort of these events that actually convene communities together to do interesting things, that's a ton of work as well. And then, you know, interesting things that come out of there, if they get somehow accelerated via incubators or whatnot, it's really good when you actually realize that how influential each of those steps actually are, and when you can actually step back and see what effect that has actually had in the nation. And so it's really valuable when you piece these different pieces together, which ultimately is a bit of an innovation pipeline, you know, where the innovators are not the innovators that traditionally have always been in this pipeline. So in this case, you have people that, you know, may have never had experience with a particular federal agency and never had experience with a particular data set, and, you know, and are just coming together for the first time. They could do something really interesting. And that, of course, that's the promise of civic hacking, that unlikely heroes will come into the story and do amazing things.
Yeah, exactly. One of the, you know, I covered the Hack the Change event in early June, and one of the coolest solutions that I remember hearing about was, I believe, is at the Department of Labor and Women Veterans.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a really. Oh, I'm sorry, Colby.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. Yeah, that was a really interesting one. That's a classic example. You know, that had to do with federal, you know, that had to do with services. You know, it had to do with women veterans. Most of the services were generated towards men veterans, and, you know, a lot of women veterans were getting lost because they weren't able to search for their services. And that's a classic example where, in this case, you actually had, a couple coders and a couple veterans actually come, you know, actually show up and form a team, you know, and, you know, design some really interesting technology that would increase the likelihood that, that women veterans will ultimately find that service. And those are the kind of things that we're going to be showcasing, you know, that here's proof that all of this effort that all of us kind of put into it, you know, actually bears fruit.
Yeah. And so that sort of leads me into a conversation I'm hoping we can have on civic hacking. Hacking tends to have sort of a misunderstood connotation to the word. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are of hacking, and, you know, especially with civic hacking?
So I mean, the biggest misconception is that, you know, hacking is, has to do with sort of nefarious, you know, nefarious online activities, you know, where, you're breaking into confidential information, you know, with an intent to harm. One of the local leads that we had, you know, told this really interesting story, you know, when we were kind of coming up, and he was sharing it. One of the things that we did in the lead up is that for all these local leads across the country, they were coming together, and we were having these weekly meetings where everybody would share with each other what's working and what's not working. And, you know, of course, one of these, you know, people had said, you know, I'm having a lot of resistance against this notion of hackers, that there's, you know, that there is this assumption that a hacker means sort of somebody that's doing bad. And what he said is that, you know, he said his grandfather told him a story that he was in World War II, and he was on the, you know, that was the first time he heard it, he was on the hacker detail. And what hackers would do is, when these planes would come in all shot up, they would take out their hacksaws and they would, you know, cut off the good parts of the bad planes and, you know, hack them onto the, you know, so the good planes help them get up. And so it was a really interesting story that's been around for a while. But, you know, of course, you know, when we're talking about civic hacking, we're talking about minimal resources and maximal brain power. You know, we're talking about people, you know, applying creativity to design, you know, solutions, you know, and really rapidly iterate on some of these solutions, you know, for problems that, you know, federal governments and agencies are facing, or also to generate value from data that some of these big federal agencies actually have, which, of course, is in the interest of everybody.
Right, absolutely. So now, what sort of role do you think that civic hacking can play in government? It sounds like, you know, minimum resources and maximum output is something that the government could really utilize, especially now.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Colby. I mean, you have this really interesting phenomenon where governments, well, I mean everybody, but certainly federal governments, are generating more and more data, And you also have, you know, a population that is becoming more and more, you know, technologically savvy, sort of over the, you know, and coupled with this, you have an era where you have large groups of people collaborating in more and more meaningful ways. You know, when we first started in this type of work in 2009, we had one event and, you know, a couple hundred people showed up at it. You know, when we just look at, you know, just the last half of this year, you know, between Space Apps Challenge and Random Acts of Kindness and National Day of Civic Hacking, this is just the initiative that we're involved in. You know, there were, you're talking about, you know, 200 cities, you know, plus that were involved, you know, within this. And there's a really significant increase in between a posture of wanting to work with other people to solve tough problems, between technology platforms that are making it easier and easier for people to come together and work together, between a posture in government that's opening up some of this data and making it accessible to large groups of people, you're seeing people that normally would not have access to this data, people that would normally not have access to particular challenges, and you're seeing this intersection of very useful, potentially useful data that's coming out of federal agencies. You see citizens with capabilities and skills and talents that have interest in particular areas, either explaining a problem that needs to get solved in the case of subject matter experts, or even designing technology solutions in the form of technologists, or designing, you know, designers providing things like infographics or whatnot. And so you have, you're really, you know, democracy was never designed to be just a vote. And I think that we're seeing an era where we can really see, well, what does it mean when you truly have a participatory society where individuals are able to participate more fully in the development of their countries, and in really meaningful ways, you know, in ways that where you have normal citizens that might have a really deep insight into a particular problem now have much closer access to it. And so the biggest change that I think that we're going to see is that we're going to start seeing large scale civic engagement as one of the standards tools of government agencies to be able to sort of fulfill their missions. And you know, I think that we're still in a pretty early era of this. But from all the signs that I know from the work that we're certainly doing at Second News, we're seeing very strong, you know, very compelling evidence that the quality of the data is getting better. The quantity of the data is getting bigger. The number of participants that are interested in doing something with that data is increasing. The skills and talents of these groups are also increasing. Collaboration amongst these people are increasing. You know, and the interest of formal, you know, for professional financial institutions like VC firms and whatnot is also looking at this space to see what they can sort of accelerate in advance. We've definitely seen a sort of an increase in that interest. So I think that the signs are certainly pointing that this is going to become, you know, more and more of an effective mechanism by which government agencies can pursue their, you know, their mission of advancing the interest of society in whatever realm they happen to be in. Now, the caveat, of course, is that we're still early stages, but you know, the amount that we've advanced between now and between just a couple of years ago is staggering enough that I think it holds quite a bit of promise moving forward.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, what sort of events is Second Muse working with, or you know, the Hack for Change or Random Hacks of Kindness that people can look forward to?
So we're working on a number of initiatives. We're of course going to have another Random Hacks of Kindness coming up in December, which is going to be going on. We still have plans to engage in, of course, space apps next year is our hope, and we're doing some work with the World Bank right now with domestic violence. One of the things that we're also going to be working with Intel imminently is really thinking through ways that we can take some of these early hacks and seeing how we can accelerate them, and how we can take a bit of a more nascent idea and turn it into a company, or turn it, you know, some of those early stage ideas.
Wow. Well, I think that's a testament right there to you know, the diverse amount of issue that you can tackle with civic hacking and domestic violence. there's not a solution to that many people think might be able to be solved with hacking and innovation and open data. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, you know, I'll give you just a quick story. In one of the Random Hacks of Kindness events that happened a couple sessions ago, before the hackathon, you have generally a meet and greet the night before, people to know each other, and for people that understand some of these problems, the subject matter experts around different areas, to kind of pitch their problems and talk about it. And there was we were hosting this event in this office space where this gentleman happens to be, and he knew about Random Acts of Kindness because he had been in Nairobi in Kenya 6 months ago when we had it last time, and he came up and his pitch was just kind of, you know, he happened to be in the right place at the right time, and he said, I'm really passionate about an issue of homelessness. And, you know, one of the biggest issues that we have, and in that case it was in Philadelphia, he said, you know, if you want to find out whether a shelter has available space or not, you make a phone call to the first shelter, and if they don't, then you have to make a call to the next one, and you got to continue this process until possibly 20 or 30 calls later, you'll finally find a shelter that's open. And then, you know, of course, you know, when you talk to somebody else, oftentimes you might have to start from scratch. And he said, you know, when you're a social worker, this is time prohibitive, you know, in order to sort of help place somebody who doesn't have a roof for the night. And if you're down and out and you don't have a house for the night, yeah, it's cost prohibitive. You can't make, you know, 20 phone calls or 30 phone calls, you know, after that. And so what he said is that, you know, what they really need is an online vacancy sign. You just need to run websites. And he said, you know, I know all of these shelters. While he went and as these coders were really developing basically what is an online vacancy sign, you know, for all 30 of these shelters, he called every single one and said, you know, if we build it, will you come? Will you use it? And they said yes. And at the end of this, you know, in a very short period of time, in a weekend, all of a sudden you had, you know, you basically streamlined and made efficient the entire process by which, you know, you can place somebody who's homeless. And so when you think about how much technology influences all of us in terms of, you know, is it going to solve every single problem? Absolutely not. And it would be dangerous to think so. You know, but is it going to be able to help the people that are trying to solve the problem? Absolutely. Is it going to help the population understand the problem? Absolutely. Can it help somebody who's actually, you know, involved in the situation? Absolutely. And when you think about this one, you know, the topics that we've covered around this have been, you know, water and domestic violence and disaster risk management, you know, and health, you know, and the list kind of goes on and on, you know, especially when you see that, you know, that you have groups like Code for America that are working at the local level, and they actually have, you know, fellows that are working with city governments and really clearly figuring out what exactly problems are these that we can start, how are we actually going to sort of systematically open up data. I think we're going to see more of this serendipity where the right person is in the right time, you know, with the right sort of challenge and the right problem, and we start to see, you know, a deeper kind of engagement in the country or city that we live.
Wow, well, really cool stuff. So I want to say thank you so much, Todd, for coming in and talking to us.
Hey, thanks, Colby. Anytime.
Yeah, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Feel free to tweet at me, at Colby Ann, and let me know what you think, some thoughts on civic hacking, if you're looking forward to the event next week at the White House, and maybe even some topics you'd like to hear for next week. That's all for Tech Take. I'll see you next week.